Hey everyone, welcome to Mom Notes, episode 4, and happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day in the future, Nicole.
do you guys do anything for Valentine's Day? With kids as a family, how do you celebrate?
Oh, definitely not with kids. definitely not with the kids. I guess now that Joan and Clyde are getting older, I do like little Valentines for their class and their daycare and stuff. But no, it is very much a me and my husband's holiday. It is very sacred. We usually do a fancy dinner or something.
Like, so this year, will you do that out or in the house?
Probably in the house.
Yeah.
We're pretty good cooks. So it might be a, hey, let's get a steak from your parents and shrimp or something and cook it up. And yeah, that's probably what we'll do. We don't really get each other gifts. We just kind of do a nice romantic dinner. And like last year I made dinner. I did steak and green beans and mashed potatoes. And he made dessert. And we just put the kids down and had our dinner late. And we had like appetizers while the kids were going to bed. Like we did scallops and stuff.
Right. Okay.
We do that. What do y'all do?
Well, we haven't really figured that out yet with the baby. Last year was our first Valentine's Day with the baby, and she was really sick.
Oh, that's right. She was. I remember.
Yeah, she was sick a lot last winter. She was very little still. So we didn't really do anything for Valentine's Day. And I think we'll probably do something like you said, dinner after bedtime.
Have you seen When Harry Met Sally?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. I love that movie. I watched it once like a while ago, and then I watched it again Thursday night, Clyde, and I just randomly bought it on Google Movies and watched it again. And it just brings me a lot of joy.
It's so good. I love all those movies, but my favorite that I watch every fall is You've Got Mail.
Oh, I've never seen that one.
What?
I know. Well, they were comparing it to When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, and it's like similar time frames.
Yeah, they're like, When Harry Met Sally's better.
Oh my gosh, I disagree. You've got to watch that. That is your homework.
Okay, I'll watch it and then we'll compare it.
You've Got Mail is far better.
Our new podcast, comparing.
I also like Sleepless in Seattle better than When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, see, I disagree. I like When Harry Met Sally better.
Okay, but You've Got Mail I like a little better than... Actually, no. I like You've Got Mail a lot better than Sleepless in Seattle. It's just so nostalgic and iconic.
I love When Harry Met Sally because it's so short. You know, it's only an hour and a half. And it's just so tight. Like, there's no frills. There's no... It's just their story and their friends. And I just think it's so romantic. Because they're best friends. It's just... And it's like you have to be best friends with your partner or you're just not going to like them after a while.
It's true. All right. So I was going to tell you about this conference I went to.
Okay. Shoot.
All right. So there is a phenomenal choir named Mirabai, and they're directed by Sandra Snow, who is the choral director at Michigan State. And we have a fabulous choral director here at a local university who studied under her and is in that choir.
I think I know who you're talking about, and she is fabulous.
Yes. And so she, I found out about this conference through her and registered, and it was really great because the registration fee was whatever you wanted to pay, but they had a recommended level, and they were like, here's what the money will go straight to. And they're really big into specifically women, women's empowerment, leadership conferences, diversity and inclusion teaching, and, new commissions and things like that. So I knew it was going to a good place. And it was over Zoom, which was different, but I actually really liked it because I could go in my slippers and like log on and off throughout the day as I could. But I learned some really great things that I thought our listeners might appreciate that I wanted to share with the podcast. So I even made a little, this is how teachery we are. I even made a little note on my Evernote app of my favorite quotes.
Okay. Yay, quotes. Nicole loves a quote. Okay. Nicole loves a quote.
I do. We have a quote wall in my classroom. And sticky notes all over my room. Hence our cover art. Shout out to Catherine Forbes.
I use sticky notes a lot too. We played a lot of games this week because we're kind of wrapping up the semester. And I make sticky note like gold and silver and bronze medals for the kids. It's basically holding up the sticky note to the camera and showing it to them. But
oh, that's cute.
I do love a sticky note. I have them everywhere over my desk.
All right. So favorite quote. So one of my favorite things that they said, which I think overrides all the other things I learned, was to remember that as educators, we have interaction and connection with more people on a daily basis than the average person.
Hmm.
So, you know, what we say and do holds a lot of weight because we do have impact. We see more people than the average person does in a day.
Yeah.
I liked that a lot. And then another quote was, you must be as open as you expect your students to be. It is our responsibility to make the people in our ensemble feel seen. And I felt that, so this episode is airing shortly thereafter the unfortunate incidents at our Capitol. And that was a big...
We recorded it right after that. This is airing a few
minutes. Oh, yes. Yeah. We're recording right after that. Yes. And there is a unfortunate protocol in most of our schools where teachers aren't allowed to talk about stuff. So I really liked that quote because, you know, kids pick up on that stuff and they're watching what we do. And another thing they said was, the only mistake you can't come back from is doing nothing. I was like, ooh.
Ooh, I don't like, ooh, that shakes me away. I don't know about all, ooh. I like that.
Mm. I know. And, you know, I don't know if that's exactly true because you can always come back from a mistake. There's always second chances. But I think it's just the importance of if you feel like you're supposed to say something in a moment, then that might be... Not if you're, like, hot-headed. You know, count to 60. Yeah. But if it's weighing on you, I think, you know, or just asking kids what they think, they appreciate that.
Yeah.
And then let's see, I'll narrow this down. So one of the other things I loved, which Sarah, this is something you and I talk about a lot. Mm-hmm. It says, let go of who you think you're supposed to be and embrace who you are. You can't expect perfection of yourself.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Like, who are you really? And yeah, I think you and I both have had that like moment of, I'm never going to be this person. I just have to be.
Yeah.
Me. And I even had that about you when I first like met you. I was like, she's such a good teacher.
Oh my gosh.
We're the same age. What am I doing?
I think that about you. Isn't that so funny? That's so funny. We're always in our heads about what other people are better at. And it's just a nice reminder to let go of what you think you're supposed to do and just do you.
Yes. And everyone is secretly a hot mess.
Yeah. And secretly comparing themselves, thinking they're worse than so-and-so.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds really nice. I hope they continue that beyond pandemic. Like people that can't travel and stuff can join some sessions and with their slippers on.
Yeah.
Well, you have this amazing, inspiring conference story. All I had to share with you was that I made brown butter chocolate chip cookies. That was my story.
Was that from the Dessert Person cookbook?
No, I made the Bon Appetit one.
Okay.
I didn't make hers. That was dumb. I should have made hers. I didn't. But it's similar. It's brown butter chocolate chip cookies.
Mmm. Are they good?
I'll show you. Yeah.
Ooh, those look good.
It's like all gooey. And the brown.
I appreciate the chocolate ratio. Chocolate to cookie.
Yeah. Yes. These are dark chocolate chips too. And they're big ones. Wow. And then I sprinkled sea salt on top.
Mmm.
Yes. Mm. Salty, rich, chocolatey, caramelly brown butter. Yep. So that's my interesting thing to share with you.
I'm going to need to go to the freezer and get ice cream, which, by the way, I got at the grocery store the other night. And I, whenever I'm getting ice cream at the store, I'm always like in my sweatpants by myself, only there to get ice cream, standing in front of the freezer, and I see a student.
Oh.
Or a parent.
Yeah.
I'm like, Jared.
Hello, this is me living in Brooklyn. Okay, so what ice cream do you go for?
Usually anything chocolate chip cookie dough-ish.
Okay. Lately I've been doing the Talenti, like
gelato ones.
The gelato things, yeah. And Clyde and I will split it. And it usually takes us two nights to finish. So then I'm like, okay, well, it's not as bad because it's like this little thing in two nights. So
that is, well, some of those are big. I'm picturing the bigger ones.
No, they're like this big. Like,
okay.
Yeah. And they have like the salted caramel toffee ones, and they have like chocolate caramel bites and the, so that's been a treat lately. For this episode, we interviewed my sister-in-law, Mary Hannah, and I mean, I've talked to her all the time. I've known her for 12 years now, which is crazy to think. But every time I talk to her, like, I just feel so inspired and at peace with that I'm a confident mom and I can do this and rock this, because that's what she instills in me. What did you think, Nicole?
It was my first time meeting her. You've talked about her, and I loved talking with her. I loved her presence. She felt like an older sister.
Mm-hmm. She's the older sister of older sisters.
Yeah, truly. Yeah, because I'm an older sister, so I really appreciate those people that I feel like have that calm wisdom. But they're still real, though. It's not like I have it all together. She was just like, she was so eloquent.
Yes, she's very eloquent. And I love when she explains like the choices she makes for her and her family. It's never in a righteous way. It's in a, this is what works for us, and I just do the best I can. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we talked with her about homeschooling, and she's also a wonderful musician in her own right. And she does a lot of church music with her husband, who's music minister at their church in New Bern. So yeah, it was a really awesome interview.
So here's our interview with Mary Hannah.
So do you still like to read classic literature like that?
I do. I will admit that in the past few years, I have not had the time. I mean, I guess you can make time for what you want to, but it just hasn't come as easily in the past little while. Hopefully will again. I think I'll get forced into it again as a homeschooling parent.
Yeah.
But, pretty soon I'm going to start being forced back into it, which will be fun.
Yeah. So how old are your kids?
They are 10, 8, and 6.
Okay. And you're homeschooling all three?
Yes.
Oof.
Yeah.
And when did you start homeschooling?
We've homeschooled from the beginning, from the get-go. So I guess, what, technically 5 years? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've homeschooled from the get-go, and they didn't go to preschool, so if you called that homeschooling, I don't know that you would.
Yeah.
But they were always home.
Yeah, Joan didn't go to preschool. We didn't send.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with Joan, we just kept her at the daycare she was at. She liked it, and she had a lot of girls her age there. Mm-hmm. And the lady who was watching her at the time was a preschool teacher, you know, so she kind of did activities with them and things. I was just like,
she's happy. So how did you guys just come to that decision? Like, why did you guys decide to go that direction?
Well, okay, so I was homeschooled. My mom homeschooled us just for kindergarten, and then we went into public school because there really just wasn't anybody else doing it. But then we were homeschooled, all of us from like the boys from sixth grade on and myself from eighth grade on. So that was a really big part of our growing up. Then when I met my husband, he thought it was totally weird.
really?
Yeah. He was like,
how did you meet him?
At college. So his mind was kind of blown that you could be homeschooled and be normal in any kind of way.
Define normal, okay, Mary Hannah. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
There was that stigma, though, I feel like in the 90s when we were kids, it was like, homeschool, like that was like a whole nother world, and there was definitely a generalization. So
yeah,
but I now know many people who are my age who were homeschooled that in my little like 10-year-old mind I just couldn't conceive of. But yeah
it's kind of hard for me, even like in some ways I know the stereotypes, and in some ways it's kind of hard for me to even perceive them because I wasn't thinking of them because I was this.
Yeah, you know? That was your world. Yeah.
So, but it was definitely very weird to him. He was very, you know, like one of the big things that homeschool parents always joke about, like the socialization, how did you meet other people? Mm-hmm. Which I was always like, we're homeschooled, not under house arrest. You know, we still go out and see people all the time.
Unless it's
you're not seeing people. Yeah.
Unless it's 2020, yeah. Which you were like fully, you were like, well, yeah. We're just going to keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah. Then all these moms were like texting Mary Hannah, like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And
oh, like, yeah.
I know what to do.
Oh, yeah. All the homeschool moms were getting all their friends. Yeah. We're texting them. Yeah, so anyway, but as we got married and then had kids, he became more and more convinced, like, this really is what I want for our family. Hmm. I want that time. I want to have that input in my kids' life. And there's like a part of it that, I mean, you're always going to be their parent, but just the amount of time gives you that much more chance to have those quality moments with your kids. Also, sort of a bonus that we didn't think of at the time, but with his job being in a church, he gets Fridays off and Saturdays. Sundays were pretty busy, mm-hmm. and holidays that are Sundays are really busy, you know. So being able to be flexible and visit people on Fridays, take Fridays off, do things a little differently has been a big benefit for our family, especially in these little years. Mm-hmm. It might be harder as they get older and they just have to spend more time. But for these early years, especially, it's been great because even if we do schoolwork on a Friday, you could shorten it, or you could, even if you did full blown, you could pack it in and be done by 12, you know, and say, okay, we've got the rest of the day.
Yeah.
That's been a big benefit.
That's one of my favorite parts about 2020, even though it was such a crazy year, was the increased flexibility with my work schedule with teaching was so nice. It was like, oh, I don't have to worry about a sub, or I can work from home if I need to with permission from my principal is just so, so nice.
Yeah, working from home has been, I've done it a few times here, and it has been so nice.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still there with the kids, but I'm on with the students.
Right.
Yeah, so the few days I have had to work from home, I've actually enjoyed it.
Yeah, I love it too. My husband hates it. He hates working. Is there any part of that sometimes where you feel like we just need to get out of the house or change it up?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, usually by the time Friday morning rolls around and my husband's at home, usually that's my like grocery shopping time. Also sometimes my chiropractor appointment, and I just to get out of the house for a little bit. I definitely need that. And that's changed a little in this past year too, but it's still been, yeah, that was actually really hard on me when we started wearing masks and everything. I was like, it's ruined my Friday morning. So like, getting out of the house, just going to the grocery store was a thing for me to get out and see other people and be a person without kids attached.
Right.
And I was, oh, I can't do this.
Yeah.
But I got into a new rhythm after a while. But yeah, I definitely need times. Matt is good about that. I am more of an introvert than he is. So in some ways I would just be like, you know what? We're good. We're just spend the day at home again. But he's more of like a, let's have an activity and go out. Let's go to the aquarium or let's go to the beach today or let's, and, that's really been helpful for me too, because I do need to get away. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the introvert in me is like, oh, let's just not do a thing.
Yeah.
That's where you're so similar to Clyde. Like last year, he was like, oh, darn, we have to stay at home and we can't. But even he got a little stir crazy, which is how bad it got. But yeah, I'm the one that's like, well, we need to have an activity. We need to get, you know, so I mirror me and Clyde there a little bit.
Yes, she is.
So how about learning how to teach? Like, did you feel like that was a learning curve? Are you following a curriculum? How does that work for you?
Yeah, learning how to teach is it's a big thing, because I really feel like for me, homeschooling was more than, it wasn't just taking on a job, it was like becoming a mom in a new way. It's mm-hmm. like a calling more than it was a job. So then this new role of teaching was, I mean, I'm still figuring it out, honestly, because you have all these perceptions in your mind of what you have to be. Again, similar to being a mom, you like think, well, I'm going to be this Mary Poppins person and it's all going to go along this way, right? And then you get involved with your kids and your kids are people and they have different opinions and different styles of learning. Mm-hmm. And they don't even like some of the curriculum you think is amazing, you know? and so you have to readjust and figure out, oh, okay. So it's a very humbling process. I used, when they were really little, I used a curriculum that kind of already did your lesson planning for you and sort of broke up for the each day, you know, here's your, what you're going to do each day. And you could modify from there, but that gave me a base to start from. And then as they've gotten older, I've done a little bit more of my own thing. And now we're part of a group called Classical Conversations. And so that is kind of my accountability. It's like my benchmark now in my life. We meet one day a week and go over all these different subjects. My oldest son is in a writing and grammar class that's pretty intense. And so that provides sort of a benchmark and accountability from other moms to like say, hey, how are things going? What's working? What's not? And we can bounce ideas off of each other.
That's good.
But it's definitely a process, because each one of your children is unique, and somebody's going to be excelling in an area and you want to let them go there and grow, and others are going to be struggling. And it's been a learning process, and I'm still learning how to best parent and best teach my kids. But I have grown more and more confident in it as I've gone. I think I started out this whole journey, even though I'd been homeschooled, my husband was the one who was confident in my ability to do it. Mm. And I was the one feeling like, you've got the confidence and I'm just trying to like mm-hmm. hang in there. But more and more, I've grown in my confidence in what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And in, yeah, just my enjoyment of doing it with them. Yeah.
Isn't that always how it is though? You're in a situation and in your head, you're like, I can't do this. I'm not equipped. And you just kind of have to go. And then, I don't know. I feel like for me, I'm never 100% confident. I feel like with anything, maybe that's
with teaching. I'm still not confident.
No.
Sometimes I get emails and I was looking at an email from a parent today and it was about like music for a show we're working on. I was like, I don't know what she's talking about. You know, like I just had like that total moment of self-doubt. I was like, oh
my yeah. God. But that's so great that your husband was like, nah, you got this.
Yeah. He's always been an extremely big cheerleader and he's confident. He is like, And we're total opposites in this too, but he is a shoot for the moon and land among the stars person. I am like a baby steps person. Yeah. You know?
Me too. That's how my husband is as well. He's just like, we're just going to do this. I'm like, but this and this and this and this.
That's so funny because my husband's so cautious. So that's like great. I could not imagine being married to someone like that. I'd be like, what are you doing?
But it's been... It's such an encouragement to me because I am such a like just one step at a time, and we, you know, for him to be like, no, this is great. He also provides that big picture perspective, you know, when I can get lost in the details of the everyday and like this one kid is like driving me crazy and they're driving themselves crazy and I'm just, my heart is breaking because I don't know what to do. He's like, we're doing this big thing and this is one part of the puzzle, you know? And so he reminds me of that big picture that don't get bogged down in this. This is just one part and this is why we're doing it, you know? So you can actually work with your child and it's been a great thing. Especially my oldest has ADHD. We just got him diagnosed and he struggled with anger issues. And this year he's doing so much better. And all the heartache of the times when it was so rough to like parent and teach and you had all that responsibility on you. It just like the payoff of spending that time with him and getting to places where it's going better, you know, and you're like, and we're liking each other more, you know, like we can connect is such it's such a good trade-off. It's like parenting in general.
So like if the struggle there's joy, like I was gonna ask like what's hard about it, what's happy about it?
Yeah, the hard parts of it, there can be a lot of self-doubt in homeschooling, all the responsibilities on you, there are a ton of choices. You all know with, you know, trying to make a lesson plan and curriculum choices, there are a million options out there now for homeschoolers, which is great, but also overwhelming.
Yeah.
And the hard is it doesn't stop. You are their teacher and their parent at all times, and they're watching you and you're trying to, you know, trying to do the best you can. There have definitely been times, and especially with my oldest and trying to learn how to work with him through things, that we have cried together on the steps, you know, because it's just been hard and he's having a hard time and I'm having a hard time, you know, and it's hard to emotionally, you're so invested, you know, and I know you get attached to your students as well. And it's hard when one's not doing well or and it's such a great joy when they are doing well.
But they leave in 4 years, like you're saying.
Right.
You're in it for the long haul here.
Right. Like we're here and we have to figure this out. There's no other choice. We've got to work through this together. And I'm still going to be your mom. You can storm off, but here I am still here. And the same for me. Sometimes, you know, I've had to come back and apologize to my kids and say, look, I got too caught up in my idea of how this had to go and forgot that my goal is to teach you and this isn't working for you, obviously. Mm-hmm. So let's switch gears.
But so you know what? That would be great advice for any teacher too, to come to your student and say, the goal is to serve you. My job is to serve you. So what's going to work best? And I'm sorry. I think more students need to hear that from their parents and from their teachers.
I just thought about this the first time, Mary Hannah, even though we've talked about this a little bit before, like you really get this like 360 view of your child, you know, like it's everything. Like for us, when our students, like they go home and I don't know what they're doing there. You know, I don't want to know usually, or like even now with Joan, you know, like I'm helping a lot with kindergarten, especially this year. But yeah, there's some of it that I'm just, there's like little parts of it that I'm not with her.
I mean, I feel that already with Aubrey, and she's only one, where she's all day at daycare, and I don't, and because of COVID, which for anybody listening to this in like 20 years, if you were just born and in 20 years you're listening to us,
you might need a COVID. Just Google.
Yeah, Google 2020. But in this time, I don't even get to watch her play with other kids. We can't have play dates. So I don't even know what she acts like as a toddler with other kids. And, you know, I just see her on the bookends of the day. It makes me really sad. But, you know, but I've gotten so much extra time with her, too, this year. So is it hard, like, if you were thinking about it from your kids' perspective, do you think that that line between mom and teacher gets blurred, or is it just that it's all they know, so it's not really a thing?
Yeah, it would be interesting. I think often about it'll be interesting to hear what they think, you know, years from now when they're adults, and like what they look back and think. I think it's pretty blurred into one thing. There is some separation.
Like, is there like a moment when you're like, I'm the teacher now, and then like it's off and we're done with school and now I'm mom? Or is it just kind of like, this is all?
I think it's all one thing. I mean, there are times when we're doing different things, but it all kind of gets wrapped into one. And actually, I feel like the more I've wrapped it into one, the better it is right now. Our mornings like now start with just me reading from a history book, and they're just laying there wrapped up in blankets, you know, still trying to keep warm because I keep my house freezing. And just listening to me read, you know, so it's almost like story time, but it's history. The classical style of learning that we've kind of started into more recently, a lot of it is questions, you know, so a lot of it, even I'm not always sort of telling them what I think, but more asking questions like, what do you think about this situation, or what do you think about this person, and how did that make you feel? And those questions, just to get their minds to actually work on it and think over it. And, you know, they do question on their own as well, but yeah.
And that's something that I think our students in this testing environment are lacking, and which I love about teaching music, because we'll play a song and be like, what do you think? How does it make you feel? You know, what did it, very open, you know, and there are so many times where my students that have had me for a while are used to it, but my first year students are like, they want me to tell them what to think. Like, they're like, but what's the right answer? What's, and I'm like, no. You just need to write something. You can't be wrong. You just need to write something down. And their brains are like, does not compute.
Yeah. So many of them want you spoon feed it to them.
Yep.
A lot of times I say to them, like, if you put IDK, you're not getting any points.
Yeah. IDK is not an answer.
IDK is not an answer. I will take it off if you
it written as a complete sentence. I mean,
no, it never is. It's always just IDK.
Well, it's also different personalities too, because my oldest is definitely more like that. Like, what do you mean? How does it make me feel? How is it supposed to be? And my second is all emoji. You know, like, he's just like, listens to a piece and he'll stop and be like, Mom, it sounds like crying. yes, it does. But I know exactly what the notes do, and they're not crying.
Like, you know? Yeah.
So yeah, but yeah, it does. It does take some training to ask questions and to just think, you know. And sometimes we're, maybe test oriented, but also just response and reactive oriented, and taking time to just think over something is not a gift granted to most of us as adults or as children. And it's a shame to take that away too. Just the time to think and ask questions and mull over big thoughts and little thoughts, and
take ownership of your learning too. Like so many of mine this year especially like struggle with that. They're just trying to like do the work the easiest and fastest way possible.
Yeah. Well, I was like that, especially if you're a smart student.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Then you know that it's easy at some point, or you're sort of intuitive as well. You can tell what the teacher likes.
You figure out the system.
Right. You're intelligent enough to know how it works. So you can do, and especially as you get into higher grades and you're starting to like look at college, and then you're like start, you know, slacking off those last couple years because you're like, I know how this is played. I can do this, and I can get my way through it.
I did that with papers in college. It drove Clyde, my husband, insane. I would write just a formula, you know, and just, I would still look at him and be like, well, I'll get an A. And he's like, but you're not saying anything. I'm like, no.
My husband is also a master of that. He is a very intelligent man. And he would ask me questions on the way to our history class about the reading. And I, for the first few times, would answer him. I'd be like, oh, this thing happened. Like, they were talking about this and this.
Oh, and then he'd use it.
You get into class, like, he'd find the perfect moment to have the perfect answer. And he knew the teacher. He knew exactly what kind of thing they'd want to hear, like what slit. And so he'd answer it and have this whole thing. And I was like,
He Rachel'd you.
Yeah.
Rachel did that to Phoebe in her class. Yeah.
That's right. Oh, that's something I would do, but I actually would do the reading because I read really fast.
Okay, that's something my husband would do. But I was a figure out the system, memorize for the test, get an A, move on, forget it, never remember it again student.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So it is definitely, it's a problem for the smart ones as well as for the ones that are struggling. Be like,
do you think it's going to get harder as they get
older? What I was just going to ask.
Yeah, in those upper grades. And
I was like, I'd be so nervous.
I've definitely been nervous. Also, it's also exciting to me, though. I find, you know, different moms are kind of like different ages sometimes. It's like you have the moms that are all about the babies. You know, it's like, I just love having a baby. And I loved all my babies. But I'm not like necessarily like the baby person. I kind of like being able to talk with my kids about issues and what's going on. So that part I'm really looking forward to. The older they get, the more we get these discussions going on, and that's fun to me, you know.
But do you feel like I would be so afraid of math? I'd be like, I can't remember how to do this.
I'm not a math person. So that's a little scary.
So you'll be learning it too.
I will be learning it too. And that's a big part of homeschooling is like you're learning. Sometimes you're learning just ahead of them. Sometimes you're learning with them. Mm-hmm. But you're
that was learning. Me teaching guitar this year. I was learning with them.
Yeah. But you just gotta take it one step at a time sometimes. Like, know that it's coming and be prepared, but at the same time, not let it paralyze you.
Good.
Do you worry about? Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
I was gonna say we have some good life advice so far. Be still and give yourself time to think. Oh man, I'm bad at that.
Oh yeah.
And now the one step at a time.
But then big picture. Yeah.
Yeah. Big picture. Yeah.
Big picture.
Do you worry about the culture shock of like college? Like, I know when Clyde talks about homeschool, being homeschooled, my husband Clyde, he says that was really hard. Like, all of a sudden going to college and being like, what is this world?
Yeah.
What's happening to me. I mean, because when I met him when he was a junior, and he still kind of had "I was homeschooled" stamped on his forehead. I've kind of erased that over 8 years of marriage. There's still a little smudges here and there.
I don't know. There's a mixed feeling with that. I want my kids to be certainly prepared to handle things in life. But there's also a level to which if you homeschool your kids, you kind of wanted that homeschool stamp to begin with. You want to be like, there's a level to which you wanted them to be different a little bit. And that's okay. So yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag. I want them to be able to handle it. I want to be the first to tell them about things too. I remember in college, there was a guy who once said something to me. He said that I was naive. And I responded to him. I was like, I'm not naive. I'm innocent. I was like, I know about things. I just haven't been around them. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So I guess I want a little bit of that for my kids. It's like, there's some things I am keeping you from being involved in right now. You will ultimately have to make that choice. I'm not keeping them, you know, for all their life from making choices. And I don't want to. But I want to be the first to tell you about those choices and things. So I guess it's okay too to like, even kids coming from public school go through a little bit of a culture shock. College is not the same.
Yeah.
It's not the same for them either. You're just having like different from different sides, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And then you get to adults and yeah, it all kind of like muddles into a thing where you're homeschooled, like you seem so normal. Like, well,
it's just this is the stage my friends are in and I'm in, but it's just like the weight of breastfeeding versus formula. And then they go to school and I saw this picture. It was like a classroom and it was like labeling formula fed, breastfed, formula fed, breastfed. But you would never know which kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
That you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So yes and no, I guess. This is a short
story.
Do you have a story? You mentioned that that there are things that you find super interesting and you're so excited to teach it, and then your kids will be like, "Wah, this is not interesting." Do you have a specific story that's kind of funny about something like that?
Mostly it's just been curriculum I could think of that I will be really excited about and think is so well, you know, it's so pretty, you know, as a lot of times it's like, it's so well designed. It's got beautiful pictures and they're just like, don't care. You know, like I do not care about the pictures, mom. I really just, it's boring when you teach it. Okay. So
I also wanted to talk about like, this is mom notes, but it's like yourself and you're a musician.
Yeah, too. I wanna hear about your music, music world too.
All right, guys. So this week I'm gonna give a director's note. And this is a game that works really well in person or virtually, so you can use it right now. And it is called Spontaneous. I also have called it Trigger Word. Just go back and forth. And it's the premise of the game is really simple. You give a word, the trigger word, and the students have to think of as many songs as they can with the word somewhere in the song and the lyrics. They get 1 point for the song title. They get 2 points if they get the song title and the artist. And I usually set a timer. So in person, I usually have the kids in teams, and they come up with as many as they can. And make a list, or you do it like round robin style and they say one as fast as they can and then it goes to the next team. I usually have a bell or something and you see how many points they get before someone stumbles or the timer runs out. Virtually they do it independently and I use Pear Deck or something and they're typing as many as they can and then I'm counting up, they count up their points and we just do a few rounds and the person with the most or team with the most points at the end wins. It's really simple, but the kids really like it. And then we go through all the songs everyone said and everyone laughs about the songs. Well, yeah, that's a great song. And Yeah, so that's just a really quick, fun game. And you can play it a few times a year because you can switch up the words that you pick.
So we've played that before in person, and but instead they're in teams and they're like in little groups around the room, but they have to sing.
Yes, song. Yeah, in person they have to sing it. Yeah, that's really yeah. fun because they sing, scream it loudly and obnoxiously, yeah. and I love it. It's great.
And it's a really good way to break up rehearsal, like if you have a long class.
Yeah, or just get the kids into singing and being more open because they're getting competitive and they're going to be really loud all of a sudden and bond. And we would do team names, or I'd do like sections, you know, so the altos versus the sopranos, and that always got very heated, but it's really fun.
Thanks, Sarah.
You are welcome. Well, you majored in vocal performance. That's
oh.
how you, Matt. Oh, yeah, she's fancy.
Yeah, so because I don't know anything. So just tell me about your musicalness.
She's real good. Spoiler alert.
I did. I majored in vocal performance and in English because I love English too.
I didn't know you did English too.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you go to school?
Lynchburg College, where Sarah
oh,
went.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah. I had a funny first meeting of Sarah too, because
oh no, okay, tell her. Oh my god.
Matt and I we were married and living in Greensboro, but every weekend we were coming back to Lynchburg because he had a church job in Lynchburg. So we would come up, stay with his parents, and work at the church on Sunday. So we stopped by the college. And we're like trying to, we went down to the music department and we're just like checking out, saying hi to people we know, you know, and stuff. And we went into the like computer lab area and
oh
we're
God.
talking with a friend of ours, and we're talking with him, and I guess he said our names at some point or something, and Sarah, who we did not know at the time, like bolts up from her seat and is like, "You're Matt and Mary Hannah?" We're like, yes, we are. We felt like it was this weird feeling of like, we're famous for something to someone. And who is this woman?
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was like right. Well, okay, so they had just graduated the year before. So that, you know, when like the seniors talk about the seniors that just graduated and how cool and awesome they were. That was Matt and Mary Hannah, because they were the coolest.
So Clyde was an English major, but he was in choir.
Yeah, he did all the music stuff. Yeah, okay. He got a vocal scholarship.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you did vocal performance and English, and why did you choose to major in vocal performance? What was your original goal?
You know, I don't really feel like I had like a huge goal. By the end of it, I really loved vocal, or not vocal, but music history. I had done this, you know, giant thesis paper. I was in the honors program, so I had done one for the honors program, and then basically a slightly condensed version of that as my music thesis as well. And I'd really enjoyed that and the research. And presenting the research, it was one of the highlights of that year was presenting my thesis. And so I really loved that. And I really felt like maybe I would do that after. As it turns out, I got married and did odd jobs and then, you know, became a mom and kept going. But yeah, I guess it was more organic. I didn't have an exact plan. My husband had the exact plan that didn't turn out the way he planned it. Yeah.
So how do you guys incorporate music education with your kids?
Oh, okay. So our kids are learning some piano.
Okay.
They're around music all the time. We have in our school year right now, we have music, sort of music appreciation where we have listening. They also do not recorder, but tin whistle time. It's very high pitched. My boys are both now in handbells and choir at church, so they do that as well. And yeah, so those kind of things, kind of basic kid things.
Wait, so Matt, Sarah is who you asked to write us a theme song?
Yes.
Okay. Can he
please, an idea.
Can he please write us something for Tin Whistle and D?
No.
like our transition music.
Oh, that would be funny. That would be funny. Our little interlude music.
Yeah, I am googling this right now, so I know what it looks like. Because I'm just picturing a lifeguard whistle.
No, it's not too far from a recorder.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
like a Celtic whistle.
Okay. So it looks, like those wooden Irish lutes, but yeah, tin.
Very much,
Oh my gosh, these ones are $304.
Not that one. We don't have those ones.
All right. Yeah, I want something written in tin whistle.
Well, I know you've already got one little ditty who's like, I just have to get it all played out. Woo-hoo! You know,
I can't wait to hear it. Yay!
So we're going to have theme music to our listeners coming soon, written by...
Might even be in this episode, hopefully. You might have heard it.
Beginning.
Can you talk more about Mary Hannah? Like, I know about it, but like, you know, singing and like music work you do at your church, because that's your husband's job, but you're like very much his like partner and assistant in that, because you like do everything with him and rock it out.
Yeah, we get to do a lot together. I get to be the backup person at all times, which is awesome. I mean, so on a weekly basis, I am usually singing on a Sunday at church. I'm usually leading worship. More recently, I've been in like the more contemporary worship. So I've been leading sort of that style of music, which has been fun for me because, you know, I had all the classical training in college, and it's very different to do contemporary, but I can use some of the things I know, but then also need to modify and what your purpose is. Just like in writing, you need to know who your audience is. Leading worship is not the same as singing for performance sake. So that's been different, but because I am married to a man who shoots for the moon and lands in the stars, I have been able to also perform roles in Elijah, because we did we got a bunch of churches together and performed Elijah, and that was really awesome. I got to be, you know, all awesome alto for that.
Oh, you're an alto. Okay.
Yeah. Or mezzo.
Yeah.
So got to do that. We did Godspell within the first couple of years we were here. And so I got to be in, you know, Broadway Lake production of Godspell. And that was awesome. He's also written a sort of, I don't know how to describe it exactly, like Broadway
musical.
Yeah, like a worship musical or Broadway-esque kind of gospel style music that we've performed, and that was really awesome. So lots of acting, lots of singing, lots of different styles, because he loves different styles. I've sung with the choir, and I've sung, I've sung with the praise team. So
does he direct these things?
He does, yes. Okay. And then I've also sung a little locally. Not as much recently because, you know, just my time is getting more and more concentrated here with the family in our church. But I've sung in the Messiah locally downtown and stuff like that. So, yeah, so that's been fun. Yeah, I got to be soloist there, which felt very fancy as well. Yeah. Where you could, like, show up the last 2 days and like, I'm here to sing my song. And that was
so fun. Sarah, we should try to find a clip.
Oh, yes. We can put it on the Insta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like work it in right here, like just a little. Here's a little
yes, clip. And here she is singing.
Yeah. My students did part of Messiah a couple years ago we have an orchestra program at our high school, which is really great. And the orchestra director and I joined forces. We did two choruses. We did three chor. We did two choruses plus the Hallelujah chorus. And
oh wow!
And a couple of we had about seven kids do a couple recitatives and arias. And it was so great.
That's so wonderful. It was
really, really cool. You know, I didn't know if they'd buy into it because we do a lot of like a cappella and, you know, spirituals and just women, girl power music and a little bit more we don't do that. We don't do like Baroque classical stuff.
Yeah, contemporary choral.
I didn't know how they would like it. And it was really great because they got to do it with a live orchestra for the first time. All of them, we brought in adult community members who sing in like the symphony chorus here and things to beef up the baritone part and everything.
Yeah.
And they just loved it. It was really
great. Yeah. When you're involved, you have that investment in it. And there's nothing like working with a live orchestra.
Totally. I mean,
it's the best.
And the Hallelujah chorus, when people stand for the Hallelujah chorus, that is also a big moment.
Yes.
And it's like it's really meaningful despite whatever like backgrounds may have started the tradition. It's just inspiring. I think there's something about that as a performer and leading people that's moving to you.
The story was that the king stood up, right? So they stood up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people, there's some back and forth on whether he was actually moved by the music or was just uncomfortable enough to, you know,
adjusting.
That's what I told my students, but I was like, but people continue to do it. It's just this tradition. So
it is the best moment in the whole thing that we've done it at Lynchburg. And that was always my favorite thing to do. And that is the best moment.
Was it because they stood or was it because you like that song?
I think both. Like, I love that song. And then the standing, you just get this emotional rush every time. It's the best. What's it like, and Nicole can talk about this some too, what's it like working so closely with your husband?
Well, because, you know, technically I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm not getting paid for anything I do.
So you're not getting paid, basically. Yeah. You're a volunteer.
Right. And I'm not like
told here.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm not accountable to a boss, you know, for it. He is. I mean, so if I mess up, he's the buck, you know, where the buck stops there. So it's a little different, but it has, well, for one, it's been awesome to have so many opportunities in one sort of, mostly in one church setting. I mean, to be able to do things from Godspell to Elijah is a broad range of opportunities that I've gotten to sing and be involved with. It has been very difficult at times with little people and having us both involved. Mm-hmm. That has been hard at times. It's been really, really tiring. But I've had to make calls at different times on whether that was too much for our kids, whether we were sort of sacrificing them for us in that case, you know, for our music. And I wanted them to always love music and I want them to love the church. So there are times when we've had to make calls on, and that usually has to be me that like steps back because it's his job.
I love working with my husband too. I like being in the same building, but when you said that your husband is the director, I was like, ooh, yeah, no, that would not work. That would not work for, like, if one of us was directing the other, I don't think that would work.
Yeah, I think, I probably annoy him more than he annoys me in that area.
I think we're the same way, too.
But yeah, there's times when I'm like, have to keep my mouth shut because I'm a teacher. I tease too. So like when it's your husband and you know, like it's, you know, all the things and it's easy to like say a little thing, but uh-huh. I shouldn't cause
right.
You know? So yeah. That's been a back and forth, like times when I've had to, you know, recognize this is not the time to poke fun at anything. But again, it's countered by the fact that he really is a great musician. And he's good at what he does. So I do have respect for him and his leading. So yeah. So that's at times great. It can be hard, probably more often for him than for yeah. me.
Do you play piano too?
I can. And if I practice, I can play pieces, but I am not, yeah.
Like you can play your part out, but.
Yes, yeah. I can definitely play my part out, but yeah, I am not a good musician in that way.
Either. When our family is all together, it's just assumed that Matt's going to play.
Matt is just like, yeah. Crazy. Yeah, his is just, when I say gifted, it's truly just, it's a gift. It's not something he would say he's not a true pianist because he's not technically accurate in his stuff, but he's just always been able to play.
He's got that thing too that I'm always jealous of where he hears it.
Mm.
And like, I'm so reliant on reading the notes and
me
the
too.
Notation.
So, you know what? I
just hear it.
I just... Mm-hmm. Went to this conference, which I referenced earlier. And mm-hmm. one of the things, it was for choral directors in across the country. And one of the things that was brought up was that historically choral music is a little too selective because it prioritizes learning, like you're saying, by reading and notation. Mm-hmm. And then, mm-hmm. and then, music ed students are taught this is the end all be all, this is the best way to learn music, you've got to learn to read, notation is the way, your students got to be literate, and then that mm-hmm. turns around and produces music teachers that teach that way. Mm-hmm. But I have I teach in a very diverse population where many of my students sing in church, and they learn by rote and they're brilliant at it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that style of learning gets prioritized in music ed enough.
No, like, no, it gets like looked down upon.
It gets looked down upon, and it's totally a skill. Like mm-hmm. I wish that I could just hear. I've had kids who could just hear it and just regurgitate it or figure it out on piano, and I'm like, that is amazing that you don't have to look at it. Yeah. And we should lift that up more, and we should teach our music teachers to teach both ways, because it makes it so that the kids who aren't good at that think like, well, I don't want to do music this way, but that it's still music. So
yeah,
it was an interesting thing to think about. And I had one of my students' moms come. She's in a singing group and they're phenomenal, and they sing gospel worship music. And they do everything by ear, all their arrangements, all their teaching. And they shared some of their arrangements with my students and they taught it all that way. And they, oh my gosh, they loved it so much. And I did it too. I was in there with them and I was like thinking in the moment, we got to do more. I got to bring in more people who can do this with them. We got to do both.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a gift. When I was, I guess when I was like middle school age, we met a family and their mom just like sang, you know, she just heard harmony and just made it up and sang it. So I was so inspired by that I taught myself to do it using Motown tapes. My dad's Motown music. I would like sit there and I would just like play the same darn phrase over and over until mm-hmm. I could hear like that harmony. And that's been a gift to me. Like now in singing contemporary music, I use that all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm making up my own harmonies a lot. Of course, it's sometimes was hard in choral works where you need to sing the exact thing. There are times when in my head I have my own version of what should happen there, and I have to fight my own version with what's written down.
That's a sign. That's like how they say people who are learning other languages, once they start to think and dream in the other language, you're fluent. That's like that. Like you've got it down like, fluently.
I'm fluent in one and not as much in the other. It's definitely something too that lets people sort of have that passion for it and the knowledge to be able to play with it in new ways.
And it's cultural too, and I think it's more inclusive when you include both ways of doing it, for sure. That's what I experience anyway with my students.
Yeah, I definitely remember having those moments where I was like, I was taught to like downplay this, you know, and like solfege and notation, that's the way. But then I was like, I'm alienating a whole group of students here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's good to have both. 'Cause I think too, maybe part of the joy of learning all the rules is like to say, okay, once you've learned all the rules, then you can learn how to mess with them.
Yeah.
You know, like how to break them prop, you know, like in a way that's going to create
On purpose
that you want, right?
Yeah, break them on purpose.
Yeah and it's going to allow you to think about it. I think that's such an amazing thing. It's something that I don't have as much, but the ability to do that and play with it, because you know the information, but you also know what you have in your head and your heart, you know, to be able to play with that is amazing. So we need both of them. We do.
Yeah.
Right. Well, usually I think we've got pretty good stuff here. We close with like your like message or advice to moms and teachers out there. I guess yours would be as a homeschool teacher and a you know awesome music lady at church and a mom. Just advice for moms out there thinking about homeschooling or want to homeschool or do a lot of music in church or
Just parent being a parent.
Yeah. Well, Mary Hannah's got great parenting.
I've learned so much already. That whole like, just like, oh my gosh. Like sitting with my thoughts, like you said, sounds terrible to me because I will go, I can't do it. I have to talk them out loud. I get stuck in my head, but the way that you put it sounded so much more calm than what I experienced.
I always say Mary Hannah's calm and collected.
Yeah.
I think it takes time to get there. I had spent like a week at my parents' house by myself. It was weird because my brother had gotten married in England and I went with them to that wedding and then came home and there was going to be a reception. So instead of going home to my family and little ones, at the time they were like 4, 2, and 1, little ones, I was at home by myself because my parents were working and just fixing food for this reception that was going to happen in a week. And it was silent for like days. And I mean, like the first full day is just you trying to live with that and be okay with that. And then after that's like, it's like rediscovering who you are, you know, like I hear my own thoughts, you know? And I hadn't experienced that in a long time. So it does take, it's not like I'm automatically good at that, but it is something worth cultivating, I guess, in our advice to moms and to teachers and to, I think, as I think about what we've talked about and everything and thinking about my own journey, what's really important is knowing your purpose, in each area. So what is my purpose? What are my goals, where am I deriving my strength and my goals from, for both parenting, for teaching, for music too, you know, like you need to be coming from a source that's well grounded, both intellectually and emotionally, for you. It can't be something that, I mean, you can run for a while on something that you know intellectually is right, but emotionally aren't there. And the same in reverse, if you're emotionally like, this is so much fun, but you have no real reason, like a grounding intellectual reason behind it, at some point it's going to run sour on you and you're going to feel like, what am I even doing? So knowing your purpose, I think, gives you that vision for the future. And that gives you a hope and something to work towards. And the other thing, I guess, would be what we've learned in 2021 is you need to be a little flexible to learn how to learn, you know, like sometimes, yeah. Sometimes some quiet is good. Sometimes pushing to make something happen is good, but you need to be able to roll with that a little bit in your life.
Mary Hannah, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your experiences as a mom and a teacher, same time with us. We really, really appreciated it and we learned a whole lot.
Yeah, thank you, Mary Hannah. I appreciated all of your wise words and getting to meet you today. We know our listeners will learn a lot from you.
So for our mom notes segment this week, we are asking for mom notes from parents or teachers or anyone out there who has a different education background than public school. Like, were you homeschooled? Did you go to a private school, like a Montessori school? Do you teach at one of those schools? Were you brought through one of those schools? Are you a parent of someone in those schools? Just, you know, other than public education, the differences there in your experiences. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and also if you have any questions, maybe you're considering homeschooling, go ahead and send those in too. And we have a direct contact.
Yeah.
Somebody who has experience.
Yeah, and she could definitely help you out getting started on that. So that's it for us here on Mom Notes, and we'll see you all next time. Bye.
Bye.